Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again to do another episode of the Nolcast. Bud, a little bit of a longer break, I guess, what, 8-9 days since the most recent recording, so happy to be able to get together, and we've got a lot of recruiting info to bring people up to speed with. Also have a significant amount of questions that were submitted, and we tried to pick out a couple to round out the conversation tonight, and we'll touch on the buy-or-sell topics as well. So let's get into it. A lot of information here. Want to always thank our friends Louisiana Hot Sauce. Three simple ingredients, a fantastically inexpensive. Quality's there in the product, and quality's there as far as a partner to work with. We've been fortunate to be able to partner with them, and look forward to working in the future. So, Bud, why don't we jump right into the Nolcast tonight?
Just got back from Chicago. I was there for the Under Armour All-America Camp, and I'm working on a couple long-form features about other topics that I can't get into because they're proprietary. But good news for Florida State out of that camp is that Marcus Washington, one of the few receivers who I think Florida State would actually take a commitment from if he tried to commit. We talked about this last week, how there's all these receivers on their board, but you know, they wouldn't necessarily take a commit from all of them. Marcus Washington, a kid out of St. Louis, is one of the kids I think they would take a commit from. You know, he's kind of guarded about it. I was like, well, give us a preview. You know, because if you give us a preview, he's like, what do you mean? I was like, well, just like the two schools that you know are locks to make this thing. Like, they've done enough. They're definitely real high on your list. He's like, oh, yeah, it's Ohio State and Florida State. Because I got to tell you, I don't know that Florida State staff knew that they were sitting as pretty with him as they are. That's a big time kid right there. I don't actually know what he's rated, but he's an elite level player. So that's good news to come out of the camp. Also, one of the few tight ends that I think they actually like in the class, Jaleel Billingsley, said that he would like to visit Florida State and does talk to them some. He's visiting Florida soon, so that's an interesting stuff there. It looks like they're doing really well in recruiting, which they are. They've been visiting all their top targets. They've hit, I think, all the schools they need to hit. Now it comes, you know, time to discover some new prospects and also to follow up on visits with kids who are really kind of premier prospects for them. So like a Brandon Smith in Virginia will probably get a second visit. They're also doing some visits this spring, right, where kids are coming on campus. Not necessarily official visits, but unofficials. Linebacker, as we've said, is a major trouble spot for this team. It's probably the least talented position on the team. Not trying to be mean about this or disparaging any players, but it's very clear that when they bring in some kids, they are going to be able to sell early playing time, big time, because what they have right now is just not very good. N'Kobe Dean, they're trying to get him to visit this month, maybe May 23rd perhaps, and then also Christian Harris, trying to get him to come in for a visit maybe on May 21st, kind of at the same time. Christian Harris is your outside backer type out of Baton Rouge. And then N'Kobe Dean is from Mississippi. So big-time studs there. And look, if you're FSU, how often does FSU get to sell early playing time? Like legitimate, hey, if you early enroll, you could start here as a true freshman type early playing time. But linebacker is the one position where they really can do it, it seems. And so they're able to sell that kind of playing time. They're visiting Quayshon Fuller, I say tomorrow, but recording this on Monday night. So by the time you listen to this, they will be visiting Quayshon Fuller this morning, and I think he'll be coming up to visit FSU actually this weekend. So they're getting some of these targets on campus that people have been asking us about. Hey, what's up with this kid? Hey, this kid's committed, but I don't see him tweeting about FSU a lot. They're also going to get Derek Hunter on a visit very, very soon, a defensive lineman out of Fort Myers Dunbar High School. So they went by Grayson. They saw those guys. Obviously, I don't think they're going to make much traction with the rest of the Grayson kids. But, you know, it's good to see the important high schools on your route. Trying to think who else they visited recently. They went by IMG, obviously. So, you know, Trey Sanders, Dante Lucas has been doing a good job recruiting for FSU at that school. Evan Neal, one of their priority offensive line targets, is also there. I think they're doing really well at defensive end, by the way. And one thing I wanted to mention, in talking to these kids, I think Mark Snyder is a better recruiter than I realized he was going to be. They say really nice things about him. And I think that Mark has come in with a high-energy recruiting style, and the kids are very receptive to it. So that is, if you told me Florida State was going to have a really good recruiting staff and that Snyder would just be, you know, a decent recruiter, I would have believed you. But if Snyder's as good as the feedback I'm getting, they might be like a super elite recruiting staff, man. That's very impressive.
This is the same guy who broke his watch with excitement as he made his way to the podium during the signing day ceremony. So I don't have any trouble believing that that individual might bring some high energy to the recruitment process.
He does, man. He definitely brings the juice. So that's kind of where we are with recruiting. The one thing I want to tell you, and this is really for our more diehard listeners, don't try to read into recruiting updates too much, because there are certainly kids that FSU has quote-unquote offered who it wouldn't take. And that's every school in the country does that right now. There's certain kids that they've offered who, especially if they're from far away, they wouldn't take unless a better, you know, higher quality teammate comes with. That's just how recruiting works. So don't be like, oh, they missed on this kid, they missed on that kid. Don't, and I know some people on Twitter do that kind of stuff. And I see all these people, hey, bud, you see that they missed on this guy. And what I want to say is, that kid's good, but he's not anything special. Florida State wouldn't take him right now. He's not a May take. He's a September take or a December take, right? He's a backup option. Just because they've quote-unquote offered him doesn't mean that they would actually accept his commitment right now, or that they were actually pushing for commitment from the kid right now. So as some targets come off the board in coming weeks, or if some kids decommit, I'm just telling you here, you heard it here, the sky is not falling. There are some kids in this recruiting class right now that I don't know are going to end up in the recruiting class. There are some kids who have quote-unquote offers who I don't think Florida State would take right now and are probably going to commit elsewhere probably fairly soon, especially some West Coast kids. So just keep that in mind. You know, they are constantly shuffling their recruiting board as they get more input. And that's what you have to do. I mean, in any business, right? The more data, the more input you get, the more you look at your options and you reevaluate. If you don't adjust to new inputs, new observations, new information, then you're really not doing your job. So it's important that the recruiting board stays dynamic. And look, the recruiting services do the same damn thing. Travis Jay is now a quote-unquote four-star. It just moved up to the number 272 in the nation. And yet, I tell you, I think he's still the second-best player in Florida State's class. He's rated as the third worst. There's no way in hell. Travis Jay, to me, is a no-doubt, like, top 100 type kid. I would have him high over Sam Howell. I would have him over Jaleel McCray. I would have him over Dante Lucas. I'd have him way over Maurice Goolsby, certainly over Mike Morris. I'd have him over Quayshon Fuller. I think he's the second-best player in their class. You know, the way that recruiting is right now in May, there's just so much misinformation out there, and stuff is going to change so much. So it's cool to follow it. It's awesome to follow it. Look, part of my job depends on people following recruiting, right, and caring about it. But it will evolve a lot. You know, is Mike Morris ever going to show that he can play defensive end at the Florida State level, or is he more of an offensive lineman? Because in my opinion, he's an offensive lineman. I think he's an offensive tackle all day. Maybe D-tackle, but he's not a DN. That guy's huge, and he's not explosive. Unless that explosiveness shows sometime soon, I don't think he's going to be an FSU DN. And then that's going to be a conversation that's going to have to be had. You know, what position do they see him at? Because he was a take by the old staff, certainly. Other schools, by the way, this is something to watch as well. How will FSU's new staff handle position changes and whatnot? Because some schools, especially some schools that are desperate, will just straight out tell a kid he's going to play one spot and then swap him. Who was the lineman out of Mobile like 5-6 years ago? Remember this? Damien Craig had him committed.
Big kid.
Real big kid.
You talk. Yeah. Did his first name start with a C? Like Chauncey?
I'm just going to pull up Bama's. I know he signed with Bama. I'm just going to pull up their class here.
Yeah.
They told him he was going to play D tackle for them, right? Remember that?
Mm-hmm. I know exactly. Yeah.
He had to be in like the class of 2013. Huge guy. He was like 370 probably. I mean, he was probably listed like 340, but that dude was. He was 370 if he was an ounce. Alphonse Taylor.
Alphonse.
Remember that? Exactly. Alphonse Taylor?
Yep.
Yeah. He's a defensive tackle. First day at Alabama. They didn't even give him a practice, man. Remember that? That video comes out and it's like, oh, at guard, Alphonse Taylor. Nice. Super nice guy, by the way. Like, bright kid. I'm guessing he got his degree. So what I'm saying is, you know, if you're Florida State and you look at Mike Morris, if he shows the explosiveness to play defensive end, that's great. then awesome. You got a legacy kid who can be a defensive end for you. I'm not saying he can't show that explosiveness. I'm just saying so far, I don't know that we've seen it. I haven't seen it. If he doesn't, what happens if other schools start telling him that he is a D end and you are sitting here and you're like, man, we need to sign some kids who are actually defensive ends. You know what I mean? You know, I don't know, like a school like Tennessee or somebody, just hypothetically, right? Anger, no, not calling out names here with specific knowledge or anything. What if they're telling him he's a defensive end and you're sitting here knowing, man, this guy's going to be 285. There's just some interesting conversations that are going to have to go on and some evaluations with current members, you know, of this class. Where do they see Quayshon Fuller? And, you know, does Quayshon Fuller see himself as a member of the class? I think that's a conversation that's going to happen on Tuesday, and I think it's a conversation that's going to happen this weekend. And is he going to be a D-tackle or is he going to be a D-end? Because if he's already 275 at 6'4", most of these guys don't shrink, right? So
if he's 275 and hadn't gone into the summer of his senior year of high school, yeah, he's going to be – he'll be 290 before he takes his first snap.
This class is going to change a lot, is what I'm saying, both in terms of rankings and in terms of who's in the class and who's out of the class. Jaleel McCray, I heard a good report about, by the way, as far as how he's moving around from a guy at IMG. So that's encouraging for sure. I'm going to be at IMG fairly soon, so I'll get to see him, probably get some video and put that on Tomahawk Nation and be able to chat with Jaleel and Dante and those guys. But right now, Florida State's sitting, if you care about recruiting rankings at this point of the year, which I think I'm pretty clear I don't, but sitting number four in the nation with 1 5-star, 7 4-stars, and 3 2-stars. If I had to rank the kids, I would say they had 1 5-star in Dent, 4 3-stars, not 2, and then whatever the remainder of that is, probably 5 4-stars. And I'm not going to give the names of the kids who I think should drop, but I think you can probably figure it out if you really want to.
I think what you touched on earlier is really the challenge for all parties involved. It's figuring out as a coaching staff who you really want to go after, and also some of the more aspirational wishes or reaches out there, whether or not it's really worth pursuing. So you're trying to figure out where you are within kind of your own backyard, and then where you may be able to go out and devote the resources and time necessary to try to target in on national prospects that would otherwise fill out the board. So it's an interesting period in the recruiting cycle right now.
That's a great point, too. This is kind of the point in the year where if you have not got a kid to visit, or at least, like, there's been some kids, right? Like, they've had Dean ready to come on visits a couple times, and he's canceled. Kind of last-minute stuff. So they're hoping to get him in this time. If you can't even get a kid to like, make a visit plan, if he doesn't actually show any real visit, like you know, inclination to make a visit or at least like set up a visit. Spring is kind of the time where you need to pull him off your board, unless you got some weird connection that you know is going to come through for you in the fall or something. Because there's some kids who they've offered who I know they like a lot, but in my mind I'm thinking, well, that kid's brother plays at Washington and he has not visited, and I don't think he's going to visit. It's cool that you offered him. It's cool he's on your board, but. And I think I'm not saying the coaching staff is making this mistake, but I'm saying just for the benefit of the listener out there, they have to be real realistic with themselves about who they can get, especially out-of-state kids. And I do think they're doing a good job of focusing mostly on in-state kids.
Anything else you wanted to touch on as far as recruiting? I know it's been your primary focus recently with some of your travels.
I think they're higher on Derek McClendon than some people think, the defensive end out of Georgia. I think he's a kid for sure that they like. I have the only crystal ball for him right now. Now, if some guys who work for the network go put a crystal ball in, I know they'll get more points than I do because that's just how that formula apparently works. I'm just kidding. Not really. Linebacker, like I said, they do need to take 4 linebackers. The one position that I'm interested to see what they're going to do, Ingram, is – I think they're going to take 5, but there's a scenario here where they could take, and I know that's people are probably just bored out of their gourd right now. Wait, is Bud really making the big deal? They might take 6? Potentially, yeah. Because you look at what they have coming back DB-wise. Westbrook and Bruton are going to graduate and leave after this year, obviously. Lavonte Taylor is not going to be a first-round pick. So, obviously, I've seen some of that stuff on Twitter, but that's not going to happen. There's a big difference between, well, some of the height stuff. Anyway, but he could go pro early, certainly. You know, Myers, we'll see. After that, their numbers at DB, you know, they could be kind of light there. So I could see them maybe taking six if it's the right six who won in. And I'll add this. I'm not convinced they take a tight end in this class. You lose Vickers after this year. You'll still have Upshur and Gabe Neighbors, because I don't, and unless they decided to move on somehow. Trey McKitty's not eligible to go pro yet. And you'll have Cam McDonald. And I guess we'll see if Alexander Marshall fits the new offense. For an offense that does not play multiple tight ends basically ever, having five tight ends returning on the roster is not the worst thing in the world. So I don't think that they have to take a tight end in this class. And if they don't find one that they actually like and think can be a player at Florida State, not just a body, I think they'll pass on the position. And that is how I think they might find a way to take three receivers, if they do indeed take three. Because right now, their plan is to take two and a tight end. But so far, I don't think they have great traction with any tight end who actually is good enough to play at Florida State. They do have good traction with a lot of nice receivers. Just saying. I could see them going 3-0 instead of 2-1. Is that as boring as it sounded to me? Hopefully not.
No,
that's really kind of in the details, just starting this thing off.
All right, folks. Started out with a little recruiting update. We'll continue to kind of sprinkle that in throughout the summer, but wanted to capitalize particularly with some of the traveling that you've been doing. A lot of great questions, and we try to pick these out maybe anywhere from 4 to 6 an episode. If we don't pick your question, honestly, I would just submit it again 10 to 12 days later, and doesn't mean that we dismissed it. It might just not have been something that we saw pre-show. So anyways, we'll jump right into them here, Bud. The first question is a interesting kind of recruiting-based question, timely here with the calendar where we are, but it is, when are coaches allowed to start coaching and interacting with commits who are not early enrollees in the spring? For example, when can players who you believe will be first-year contributors, such as Harrison or Xavier Peters, receive playbooks? Are coaches not allowed to interact with non-early enrollees until they are physically on campus?
Pretty sure they can do it now. I mean, the kids get sent their playbooks a while ago, so they can already interact with them, as far as I know, already. Now, if you recall, Willie Taggart did not give everybody the playbook until spring because he did not want the current players, because he did not want them to read it, misunderstand it, and then develop bad mental habits before he had a chance to explain it to them. My guess is that they are not going to get playbooks, at least the offensive players. I don't know how the defense is going to do this. I don't think you're going to get any kind of playbooks until they get on campus. Now, the workout regimen and like the goal weight. Yeah, I was going
to say, first thing you get is your straight S&C plan. Absolutely.
Yeah, they really just want those guys to come in the shape they want them, you know, obviously. Like that's, and maybe that's like, hey, be in the shape for this role that we want you in. But yeah, I don't think like they're going to be sending them like full playbooks. Unless that for some reason, like if there's a high school coach or like a dad who's like a college or, you know, like an NFL coach or something like that, which I don't think there is in this class, who could really explain it and who really gets the offense, you know, then maybe in that unique scenario you could get the head start. But I don't think other than that it's going to happen. Here's one for you, Ingram. Thanks for always bringing the heat, like Louisiana hot sauce, on a weekly basis. Love the straightforward approach y'all have when it comes to discussing the Noles. I'm a huge recruit, Nick. I just had a few questions over the summer about summer camps and other summer recruiting events that will take place under Willie Taggart. Awesome. That's good. So what exactly have you heard about Taggart's approach to the camps? We'll be hosting skills camp, running backs, linebackers camp, and big man camp. They're going to happen in early June, and that's really all I've heard about it, to be honest. Like that they are having them. It seems like, I will say, it is the one change that we see from the Jimbo camp now is that they are broken down by positions on different days. So I'm interested to see how that impacts how many campers come, because when you do all the positions on the same day, you know, you can have hundreds of kids there, which they definitely did sometimes. That's both good and bad. It just depends on your staff size and what you're trying to accomplish with the camp. Now, the positive to that is that you'd have high schools bring like everybody up. The negative to that is a lack of one-on-one time you get with certain kids. So we'll see. My guess with this is that you will not have high schools bring their entire team because they'd have to stay there for like, you know, a 4-day period, basically. Although, you know, with Jimbo's old camps, they were multiple day camps anyway. So I don't think it's going to be a massive difference. Just the structure is slightly different. Next question is for the 7-on-7 camp, do you see teams from across the country, like the Ground Zero organization that would be come from, coming to play in this event, or mainly just teams from the Southeast, or just anything you've heard about how this camp will be run or how the coaches plan on utilizing it from a recruiting standpoint? Well, if I recall, the last 7-on-7 camp they did, a lot of these are high school camp, are high school tournaments. I don't know that this is going to be a like a club team thing. It could be, but I don't. My understanding on this was that it was high school teams and bring their 7 on around. If it's club, that would be a different thing, and that could be interesting. There's both good and bad for that, certainly. I'm gonna star that actually and ask. That's not something that's that hard to find out. I didn't see this question before we started. And then we got a third one here. I remember reading about Taggart. We had a question. Basically, the question is, are they going to have a barbecue or cookout event with families similar to the one that Clemson and other programs do? And if they do, do you think they'll try to get a good number of former players to attend the event? I don't know if they're going to do that or not. It's not a bad idea. It just depends on timing. Certainly, Tallahassee is a hard place to get to, right? Clemson can do that because Clemson is like an hour outside of Atlanta, right? Or about an hour, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it's an hour, 10 minutes, straight up 85. Absolutely.
So Tallahassee is in the middle of nowhere. It's the most geographic, and I wrote about this at Tomahawk Nation, I think in 2013, and I know the Boosters actually used this in one of their meetings. So thanks for reading Tomahawk Nation, FSU Boosters.
But wouldn't be the first time that had happened.
No.
Or if information from maybe a podcast wasn't related in particular meetings.
Potentially, but, yeah.
Anyway.
Shout out to all our listeners. So here's the thing with this. FSU is the most geographically isolated team with a stadium of at least 80,000. And I know they don't have 80,000 anymore. It's like 78 something because of the Champions Club, but the point stands. It's actually more geographically isolated relative to the population than Nebraska. It's very hard to get to Tallahassee. It's a full day trip, like from a lot of places. And that limits who you can have come in for a barbecue. It doesn't mean they won't do it, but there are certain things that are just easier for certain programs that are in better geographic spots than it is to do in Tallahassee.
All right, bud. Next question here is, gentleman writes in, I was heading back to Atlanta from a wedding in Florida this weekend and passed Lowndes High School while listening to another great podcast. Thank you, sir. It got me thinking of a fun hypothetical. If you could only recruit out of one high school in every state, obviously only the main recruiting states that he's interested here is Florida, Texas, Georgia, Louisiana, Virginia, which would you choose? Florida was damn near impossible to pick. But I think that's a pretty interesting question there.
It is. Okay, so the high school in each state. And then he has a follow-up.
About the cities. Yeah, if you could only pick one city.
I think the city one is almost more interesting. It's more relatable to a broader like listener audience. I would say in Florida, it's clearly IMG. Like, I love Aquinas, but as far as the kids he brings, right. But it is IMG.
I was going to say, for Florida and Georgia, we'd probably need to take out one high school apiece if we were going to have a traditional look at the cherry picking
high school. If you want to go counties, I think that's interesting because I would want to go probably – do you go Dade or Broward? That's a good debate.
That's tough.
Yeah. I mean, because that the counties thing kind of takes out the city, you know, type thing. Because like if it's cities, then you just go Bradenton and you take IMG, right? But if you take IMG out of it, which sort of slams things.
So let's take Grayson and IMG out of this, just for the
Because in Georgia, I was going to pick Gwinnett County for sure.
Yeah,
that they're so loaded up there. That's pretty ridiculous. But I Buford's in Gwinnett County, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay, so I still get Buford. I still get Lanier.
Lanier,
Sugar Hill,
maybe
area?
Forsyth. Yeah,
I'm gonna go with Gwinnett in Georgia. In Houston, it'd be probably Travis County, or excuse me, in Texas, probably Travis County. Right? That's Houston, I think. No, Harris County. Travis County's Austin.
Dallas, whatever Dallas Carter's in, I'd take a look at that county.
Yeah, that's pretty solid too. What would now in Virginia? Would you go Virginia Beach, or would you try to go more towards DC.
No, I would go, give me the county that has Hampton Roads, the high schools of Vic Iverson, Ronald Curry. Yeah.
And in South Carolina,
you may want to go, like, there's some pretty ridiculous rural counties in the low country that,
yeah, it's just not all clustered. You know what I mean? Because
absurd talent. Yeah. Yeah, that's a tough. South Carolina would be tough. That would.
And LA, I want Orange County for sure.
Yeah.
Like, there's no.
Georgia, you'd want Gwinnett. Fulton would be. It'd be hard to go wrong. And taking Lowndes County historically wouldn't be a crazy thing to do either.
No, for sure. What county is Cincinnati in Ohio? That is in Hamilton County. Yeah. Because I also get Lawrenceburg. You get some Northern Kentucky stuff. I'd probably take that. Because within that, I also get the Catholic League in Cincinnati.
Oh, right. Yeah. St. X.
And Moeller and those schools. So I do that. In Illinois, it's definitely St. Louis. I mean, there's no doubt. I was just there. Mississippi, either the county where Panola is located, you know, South Panola High School,
yeah,
or like, yeah, the Biloxi Gulfport area.
Gulfport is what I was going to say. Yeah. Yeah, Gulfport would be hard to a lot of Mississippi talent out there. So,
and Alabama, would you go Mobile or would you go Birmingham?
I'd go Mobile. You seem to get a little different level of athlete at a Mobile.
Yeah,
maybe more than you would Birmingham per se.
I think you're probably right on that. That's a good question. That's a fun, creative question.
Lowndes is he just mentioned that driving. Lowndes is like that high. That stadium is right on 85. I remember, like, not to get all nostalgia, but I remember being like a real young kid that was like the first time when I would drive from Atlanta to Florida. There's that high school, and then I think somewhere down in maybe it's Lake City, I don't know. There's another high school stadium about an hour south, but you drive by those stadiums at night, and you know, as a real young kid, and it was the term Friday Night Lights before the book and everything else came out. It's real easy to see why. I mean, those things are just like magnets to your eyes, and it's a interesting thing to see in real rural parts of the country that you've got this, you know, glowing little piece of turf. It's just a early way that I became intoxicated with high school and college football.
It is cool,
you know,
man.
Everybody wants to know my thoughts as a 5 or 6 year old. I know, but wanted to put them down there.
Hey, Manuel, it's talking season. There ain't nothing going on. Willie Taggart's doing his tour.
It's talking season.
It's talking season. It's talking season for us. It's talking season for the coaches as they go around and talk to recruits and talk to coaches. And there's not really pads popping right now, other than high school kids hitting each other in practice. You know, it's just people talking. All right, absolutely love the show. I'm sure I'm probably not the first, but I recently tried to support all 3 Nolcast sponsors in 1 month. I bought a Badasses and War Daddies T-shirt from madso.com. Or, by the way, our shirts are coming back. If you did not get a Nolcast shirt, we're going to have those back soon for a second run. Order a case of Louisiana hot sauce online. That is serious. Sponsors. And attempted to use Resolution Home Loans for the purchase of my new home in San Diego. Fortunately, Chad told me they don't write loans in California. But when I refinance my St. Pete home, Chad and Shannon will get the call. And, of course, I dropped your names with all 3 orders/calls. That is awesome. Thank you, Mike, San Diego.
Hero, sir.
Buy or sell, Ingram. 2018 will be the low water mark in terms of wins for a Willie Taggart Noles team. And then he has an asterisk here. Barring a Jimbo-esque final season with injuries at key positions and almost the entire coaching staff quitting on the team on their way out the door. So, in order for our official record keeper of the show, whose name I actually forgot, I need to check that in our email, but he does keep a record of what we say in the buy or sell segments. This is basically...
You're a valued member of the team, sir.
You are.
I promise you.
And we do appreciate... We had like 300 people follow up with spreadsheets they made like during that same week, but first come, first serve, you know, as long as we're organized, and it was. That was nice. We have a lot of people who love using spreadsheets out there. I do, too. I keep my nose in spreadsheets, by the way. So if we make this question, basically, 2018 will be the low water mark for wins for Willie at Florida State, with the exception of whatever his final season is at FSU. Does that seem fair? Because the last season is almost always a season that gets you fired, or you know, you might leave,
or you take a job,
yeah, like an NFL job, right, or some craziness like that. I'm gonna buy, Ingram, and when I read this question before the show, I thought I was gonna sell, but I'm gonna buy because of the caveat there. Also, Florida State's playing arguably the toughest schedule in the nation. ESPN, I think, has it 2. Phil Steele has it 1. And they have a term that I want to start using on the show, and it's called a development deficit. Right now, this roster has a development deficit because the coaching staff basically just quit on them last year. And so they lost a year.
Of former staff.
Yeah, they lost a year of development. You know, when you take that and you combine it with having to learn and, you know, implement new systems, and you put that with the toughest schedule in the nation, I will buy this. Yeah. Now, yeah, I think I'll buy.
I'll buy it as well. I'll echo what you said and only add the additional challenge that will somewhat be eased over time, but that is a little bit of personnel, mismatch personnel of what they ultimately want to do. So, yeah, I think I'll buy that as well.
Nice, man. Yeah, I think that's fair. You know, and the injury thing, by the way, is something that I thought about. You know what team stayed incredibly healthy? And Tom Block actually tweeted at me about this, but 2013 team. And back in the day when we were podcasting, we talked about
this. I've heard they had a bit of health fortunate series of events, or at least non-events, that ended up going their way. Pretty healthy bunch on the
whole. One of the healthiest teams in college football history. I mean, them and the 2000 Oklahoma team, which actually beat Florida State. Tom Block said, and this is on May 2nd, he responded to a tweet between Patrick Noe and myself. I had a conversation with Jeremy Pruitt mid-year in 2013, and Block does a lot of the FSU TV shows as well as being the announcer. He said, basically said, we've got good frontline players, but very few glue guys, very little depth. It never got exposed because they never got hurt. And that's true. Tyler Hunter was actually the only regular starter on that team to miss more than a game or two. You know who replaced Tyler Hunter on that team and never gave out the spot? Was a guy named Jalen Ramsey.
That worked out pretty well. I would say that might have happened. Although Hunter pre-injury was a pretty damn good player.
Yes, exactly.
Unfortunate to see what the end product was there.
Yeah, I don't mean his injury worked out well for us. I just mean simply the replacement. I don't want people to go run and be
absolutely.
Like,
No, nobody thought that. Yeah. And if they thought that, they're not worried about
it. Yeah, our listeners are pretty smart.
Not worried about somebody who takes that away from that that interchange.
You want to read? You want to read 5? I think this is probably the most popular question of the week.
I would say so. Can someone explain to me why Florida State dropped out of the way too early top 25 rankings on ESPN after the spring? They also dropped in the CBS Sports rankings to number 24, leaving the Gators with a higher ranking. I believe most people who follow Florida State heavily left the spring positive and highly satisfied. I wonder why outsiders think Florida State got worse. Is this the fact that Francois is in the media favorite, and yet he is unlikely to win the starting job?
Okay, so let's tackle this real quick. You look at FSU's rank, or at the rankings. Like what does this is going to be kind of a long discussion. This is probably going to be kind of our featured discussion of the night, I'm sure. So you think about this: when they're doing these rankings, are these power rankings? Or are they projected like finishes, like how teams will finish? Because if they think that Florida State will finish outside the top 25, I don't actually have a problem with that. Not a big one. Maybe a small one. If this is a power ranking in terms of, because you guys understand the difference between the best 25 teams and the top 25? The top 25 is basically just writers taking teams, grouping them by record, and then within those certain ranges, arranging the team. So they're going to have almost all the 2-loss teams ahead of almost all the 3-loss teams, and almost all the 3-loss teams ahead of almost all the 4-loss teams. For instance, last year, do you know how many teams with 5 losses finished ranked? Only one. No, excuse me, Stanford did at 9-5. Kind of a weird year there. 5 teams with 4 losses finished ranked in the AP. 5 did so as well in the coaches poll. The thing with this is, in a given year, there's going to be a number of 4-loss teams that are left out of the polls. So if this is a projection of the final top 25 rankings, I don't have a huge problem with it. Florida State is coming off a development deficit, and they are going to play the toughest schedule in the nation. I'm already on record saying I think they lose at least 3 games. I mean, somewhere in that 3-4 range is probably the most likely outcome. If they go 10-2 or better, I think that's a wild success. If they go 7-5 or worse, I think that's pretty disappointing. But I don't know that that's actually like what this is supposed to be. And that's where I think a lot of people are kind of upset, because if you look at it, it's Mark Schlabaugh's way too early top 25. Have you looked at this, by the way?
Yes, I've seen that.
He doesn't say this is where he thinks they're going to finish. In fact, I'll read you his Florida State blurb. And this is, oh, wait, I can't, because Florida State is not in there. But I can read you some of the other blurbs. And look, Schlabaugh is really good at some of the stuff he does, but I don't know how informed he actually is on this. And I'll tell you, as a guy that works in a media company, there's some articles that you do that you're really excited to do, and there's some articles that you do that you just do because you've done them forever.
And somebody tells you they want it on their desk by Tuesday.
Yeah. And look, yeah. It does seem like he puts a decent amount of research in this, so I can't totally fault him for it. But at the same time, they're only like 8 sentences apiece, which is not that tough to do. So I'll read you FSU's opponents here, and we'll see if we can just spot like any obvious question. Clemson comes in at number 2. That's fine. Bama's number 1. I think everybody's going to have them number 1. Alabama isn't the only playoff contender with a brewing quarterback battle, which if you think Alabama has a quarterback battle, I got some land to sell you. Senior Kelly Bryant led the Tigers AC title and a playoff berth, but Trevor Lawrence is going to push him, blah, blah, blah. Clemson coaches have raided his ability. It wouldn't be a surprise to see both Lawrence and Bryant play in September 1st opener. Okay, so nothing real insightful there. Guess what? Clemson is going to be really, really good because they are going to have the best defense in the ACC by a mile. And their offense should be pretty decent. Okay, then next, number eight, Miami. Apparently, Mark Schlabaugh cut the cord and canceled ESPN after Halloween. Disappointing because he actually works for him. I guess he should get cable free.
Freeing up a little holiday spending money. Must have cut it off the first week of November or something. Yeah, you're right.
Miami's record to finish the year was not real impressive. They got their ass beat by Pitt, and then they lost to – you remember who they lost to? They lost what, North Carolina, I think, beat them? Or did they come back to beat Carolina?
Clemson embarrassed them, and then they lost the bowl game.
No, they beat UNC, okay. And then they beat Notre Dame. Yeah, okay. So they lost to Pitt. They lost to Wisconsin, and then Clemson just put it on them. You know, that's just interesting that a team, you look at it, their record in one-score games was 4-0, and they still lost 3 other games. So all 3 of their losses came by double digits, by 2 scores or more. Generally, you're going to lose and win about half of your games that are decided by a single score. Those are kind of coin flips. If you did not put your opponent away and you allowed them to stick within a single score, then you are, in theory, at risk of losing that game. So Miami was not a top 10 quality team last year by any measure that we would consider like an advanced metric. And obviously Florida State was not either.
One of the most fortunate months I've ever seen a football program have. If you want to go look at their month of October and just look that over, they will. Record's the record. Not trying to take anything away from them, but go back and look at the 4 games played in October and tell me that their season couldn't have looked significantly different.
Right. And look, you're right. You should not take anything away from the record. You should take things away from their quality of play and their performance, which was not a 10-3 quality of performance. They were certainly a lucky team. They were probably more of an 8-5, 9-4 level team, which is fine, but a lot of the better players on that team, I don't know that that's necessary. And look, I'm not saying Florida State is going to beat them. I think Miami will be favored over Florida State when they go down to Coral Gables. Number 8 seems kind of high to me. They have Malik Rozier, who was not very good last year.
Fan base is fully behind him.
Oh, God.
Ready to absolutely give him their full
you
support.
You want a stat to troll the hell out of Miami fans, by the way. If you got Miami fans who hate Malik Rozier and you just want to talk, like, you want to kind of tongue-in-cheek say how good he is, you know he set the Miami record for total touchdowns last year, rushing and passing combined? 31 touchdowns. No Hurricane. Not Ken Dorsey. Not Kelly. Not Testaverde. Yeah. Not Toretta. Malik Rozier.
Talking about a program legend.
Dude, I mean, one of the best of all time, and they want to bench him. Just totally unrealistic at Denver Coral Gables. They got some good players on this team, but the quarterback's still a major issue. I think offensive line will be an issue. Defensive line, Schlabaugh says it has to be revamped. That's putting it kindly. Chad Thomas, RJ McIntosh, and Kendrick Norton must be replaced. Those guys were, I think they all got drafted. And highly regarded in DJ Johnson, transferred to Oregon because he was homesick. Making matters worse, Craig Kulikowski, who I think we all agree, is a pretty good D-line coach, but not necessarily a good recruiter. One of the top D-line coaches in FBS took a job at Alabama. The Hurricanes are banking on former player Gerald Willis III, was kicked off of Florida for off-field issues and missed last year due to off-field issues, and Demetrius Jackson, who's a defensive end, coming back from knee surgery. Number 8 team in the nation. That is an interesting resume for the number 8 team in the nation. West Virginia, he has at 11. Their defense has been just gutted, but I guess we'll see about that. Trying to focus here. Number 12, Notre Dame. I don't have a problem with that. I think Notre Dame will be a better team than Florida State this year. How about his next one? This one was kind of curious to me. Did you see where he had Vatek?
Where were they, around 20? 15. In the low 20s? 15? No, I didn't remember.
That's a little ridiculous to me. Vatek lost just as much talent as Florida State did on defense. And
if you watch the draft, yeah, you're reminded of two particular significant pieces that going to be gone from that defense.
So both starting cornerbacks, their best defensive tackle, and then their best safety, and their best linebacker, who was maybe the best linebacker in the whole country in Tremaine Edmonds. That's a lot of talent to lose on defense. 15th in the nation, huh? This is what kind of makes me wonder, because Vatek's schedule is a lot easier than Florida State's, right? Like if you look at the if you look at their schedule strength, and I'm just going to use FPI for this. I know a lot of people don't like FPI. I don't either, but it's kind of a quick and dirty schedule strength method. They play the 54th ranked schedule in the nation. Florida State plays the number 2 ranked schedule in the nation. I do wonder, this context clues-wise, I think Florida State will be a better team than Virginia Tech this year. I think Virginia Tech will win more games than Florida State will because the schedule is so much easier. If that's the case, if Mark's looking at that, maybe this is more of a projection of the final poll, and I don't have quite as big of a problem with it. You know, like, he has Miami very high, and to be honest, Miami's schedule, not very good. 50th. Florida's schedule, 55th. You're probably going to catch a lot of smack talk from rival fans this year, just letting y'all know this, if you're a Knoll, because your schedule is so much tougher than theirs, and they won't acknowledge it, certainly, and that's just kind of the rules of smack talk. They'll probably lose fewer games than Florida State will this year because of the difference in schedule. Just moving on real quick. Also, I don't think Vatek has their quarterback stuffs like figured out entirely. And they're working with some true freshman corner, so we'll see kind of what happened there. And their defensive coordinator resigned on Friday, for reading from Slaybaugh's report, for personal reasons. The Washington Post reported that he stepped down after admitting to using recruiting trips to pursue an affair. So they have a new assistant DC and safeties coach. UCF is at 18. I don't know. It seems kind of high for guys. Their team just lost Scott Frost. And South Carolina is at 25. Does he have the Gators on here? These polls are not worth a damn. Spring poll. I mean, look, fall polls are not either, but spring polls are especially ridiculous. And here's why you know it. These don't line up at all with what Vegas thinks. Vegas is the one that gets in trouble if they screw this stuff up in the spring. That's why they don't let you bet very much money on these things. You notice these prop bets coming out? You can only bet like 500 or 1,000 on there. Come spring, you can probably get down 20,000. Or, excuse me, come fall. They're not real certain right now. The writers, mm-hmm. who don't do as much research as Vegas does, because there's no real penalty if they're wrong, are even less certain. And they're just throwing stuff against the wall to see what sticks. So I really would not worry about this at all, other than the fact that it's probably a good reminder of how tough Florida State's schedule projects to be for this fall. And I didn't read the CBS one. Who wrote CBS?
Yeah, I'm not sure who did those.
I mean, I'm trying to think who at CBS I actually care about. Oh, Dennis Dodd. No, I'm not clicking that. Don't care at all. No offense to Dennis, but I mean, no. The second part of the question was, is it the fact that Francois is the media favorite and is unlikely to win the starting job? Which I think is an interesting question that dovetails into something here, man. Hey, I don't know if Francois is the media favorite. I don't know that he's unlikely to win the starting job. I don't know if he's the favorite. I think Blackman's probably the favorite. How much better does Francois have to be? This is kind of a question for me. So this question is sent in by Bud. How much better does Francois have to be than Blackman to win the job?
Are you saying this from a perspective that, in your opinion, he may have some ground to make up as far as his standing with the coaching, or the fact that you've already sunk 8 games into Blackman and that you know, you have a little bit more of maybe a raw product, but something that you could work with over time.
I think that those are certainly things to consider. Also, I think obviously the ground to make up, which is not speculative. Willie Taggart said that he has to do this in terms of how you act and behave and, you know, be a teammate and a citizen and stuff like that. Also, the fact that you're going to have an extra year with Blackman as opposed to I think it's got to be like, I think, you know, Ty goes to the runner. Ty goes to Blackman. You got it.
Ty certainly goes to Blackman, but I don't. I may disagree with you a little bit here. I think as a first year coach, you probably now look if kid's not coming to events or if he's not doing things necessary to be the starting quarterback, then this isn't a conversation at all. Blackman's going to be your quarterback, but if Francois is doing what's necessary, I think is. You know, as any coach, it doesn't matter if you're a first-year coach or anything else, but particularly as a first-year coach, I don't know that you get too far away from the option that gives you the best chance to win as many games as possible.
I think so, but at the same time, if you get a grace year, it's this year, right? This is the year that nobody really expects much out of. Well, I shouldn't say nobody. I think the people in power don't expect a whole lot this year, as they probably shouldn't. Mm-hmm. A lot of the fans seem to expect a lot, and this is what we've been trying to tell them. Hey, guys, separate excitement and positive momentum in the long and in the medium and long term from 2018 expectations, because 2018 was going to be a down year, even if Jimbo hadn't left and hadn't quit coaching. That's just how it was going to be due to the talent leaving. 2016 and 2017 were your years to win something and it didn't happen. 2018 was going to be a down year. We said this, I think, for the last 2 years. So I'm not backing off it. I think it's actually an accurate evaluation of the roster. I do think Francois has a fairly high bar to clear in terms of how much better he has to be than Blackman on the field, because I think the trust aspect is going to go to Blackman, unless Francois just does a total 180 of how he is as a person. Like, you better be a lot better, especially because, you know, what if Francois thinks he's going to the NFL or something like that? You know, like, I know some fans think he's going to be an NFL quarterback, and soon. I don't agree with the soon part of that. I won't count him out entirely for the NFL, but I think he's got to be a considerable amount better. All right, we got some questions here. A lot of, the guy thanks us for not pumping sunshine, and we appreciate that. Just likes the honest takes. He has some questions about stemming from last week's podcast about the Under Armour camps and about Deion. Angerby says, does Deion have special privileges regarding recruiting at these Under Armour camps? Are there any rules as to what he can and can't say, particularly in respect to Florida State? Does this present any conflicts of interest between Deion at a UA camp and FSU being a Nike school? Would Deion be able to do even more if FSU was an Under Armour school? Would this make Florida State particularly valuable to Under Armour? What does FSU's contract with Nike look like? And could or would Under Armour try to outbid them? It's a lot of questions.
A lot of questions.
I don't think there's any specific rule saying that Deion can't say something about the school. Like I think tongue in cheek, he was like, "Yeah, you know, the best DBs go to Florida State." I don't think he was actively recruiting kids to FSU. You know, there's a lot of joking that goes on to these things. Deion is not acting as an agent of Florida State or anything. I'm at all these things. I see him all the time. He's not doing that. And
Deion it may be nice to have Deion a little more interested in the program, but trust me, Deion Sanders agent of but one entity, mm-hmm. and that is Deion Sanders.
Yeah. So as far as rules, I'm sure there are some rules that he can't like openly and like repeatedly recruit Florida State. Not that he's trying to. Are there any conflicts? Not really, because I don't think there's not really a whole lot of big time Under Armour schools out there. Not yet. Auburn's an Under Armour school. Maryland is UCLA, or are they Adidas again? A&M's Adidas. Bama's Nike, Georgia's Nike, Miami's Adidas, Florida is Nike / maybe Jordan now, I think. So, South Carolina's Under Armour. Those are the two big SEC schools they have.
That's right, yeah.
So, no, I don't think there's any conflicts of interest. I'm sure Under Armour would love to sign up to be a Florida, you know, to have Florida State, but I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon, and I don't think Florida State's contract is up anytime soon either, so... That's really all the knowledge I have of that, and I don't have any knowledge of Under Armour's attempt to get FSU, even if there is an attempt. And if I did, I very much doubt Under Armour folks would tell me. The people that run their camps are not the people that negotiate their contracts. I'll just leave it at that. Yeah, that is an interesting question. It's just I wish I could offer y'all more. I just don't have more on that subject.
So this is from a gentleman that was able to join us at the tailgate that we had. Want to thank Madison Social and the For the Table Restaurant Group. That particular event was held at Township, but we've received emails and phone calls. Just a confirmation of a lot of things that we had said about that place for a long time. For a lot of people who are making their first appearance at a For the Table, one of their properties there. So a group that we're so very lucky to be able to work with, continue to be able to partner with them. They've been with us since day one. They had their finger on kind of the beat of this fan base in a way that I'm not sure is replicated in too many other college towns. So we'll just take this time as we answer Mr. Davis's question to thank our friends at Madison Social For the Table Restaurant Group and all that Matt and his team does to make this podcast a success and to continue to bring a whole different kind of approach to some of the culinary options that make their appearance in Tallahassee.
Awesome. And look, we saw all the people graduating from Florida State have a great time at Madison Social, at Township, at Central. That's so cool, man. And Matt, so just they're so in touch with the Florida State community and that whole For the Table group. They really do a good job. It's a NOLA-owned business, and we certainly love those on the podcast. But everybody had great graduation ceremonies there, or graduation dinners or brunches. Just awesome. That's cool. Very much appreciate them being a longtime sponsor of ours, and we love when y'all support our sponsors, both in person and on social media. So Gary asks, I was curious to know if y'all have noticed a new spirit and enthusiasm in the Knoll Nation. Is it more than the honeymoon with a new coach? Is Coach Taggart just the right guy at the right time? Is there a chemistry thing going on, like Louisiana hot sauce and a favorite dish? Nice, Gary. Keep up the great work. Hope to see y'all again. So I would say, I think there is a new spirit and enthusiasm. Absolutely. And I think it could be more than a honeymoon with the new coach, because I think that the new coach has connected above and beyond with the fan base more than, let's say, like, I don't think UF's fans are embracing Dan Mullen quite like Florida State's are embracing Willie Taggart. Now, a certain portion of that is the honeymoon period, which will go away, especially if you don't think this year's going to be that good, and I don't think it's going to be special. But I don't think that his connection with the fan base and reaching out to them like he has is something that's going to fade quite as quickly. So he does deserve a lot of credit for those elements. And certainly it was also a fan base hungry for somebody they could connect with, because the old guy was very cold. And I think you saw that how quickly people turned on him once they started losing ball games. Also, once they quit on the players, which sucked. Yeah, I think it's fair to say there's a new enthusiasm in Knoll Nation. You think so?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I don't think you could walk away with any other takeaway from the spring game other than that there's a massive amount of interest and energy behind this program right now. Not to be redundant, I agree with a lot of what you said. I think anybody would have been welcomed, and there would have been a lot of excitement for anybody. Not necessarily anybody not named Jimbo Fisher, but anybody who showed like a real interest and want to be here and excitement about the opportunity to coach at one of the premier programs in the country. The fact that it happens to be a kid from Bradenton, who very much appears to have had an authentic infatuation with this institution, and his family does, and he identifies with some of the legends that people of our age grew up watching on TV and everything else, I think just adds that extra, kind of 10-15% that's pushed some of the exuberance and excitement about the program into kind of overdrive here.
We got a question here on Willie Taggart Jr., obviously Willie Taggart's son. He's a class of 2020 quarterback, and the questioner wants to know, does him being a 2020 QB hurt the Seminoles' chances with the top QBs for 20 and 21? I would say no. I don't think it does, because I think Taggart is smart enough that if they take it, first of all, if his son wants to play for him, and if FSU wants him, I don't think they would take him commitment-wise unless they're very sure that he's good enough to be their guy, so that there's no conflict of interest, right? I think that's a mature approach in how to deal with this kind of stuff. And I think that that's something they've already thought about. So I know I haven't heard anything about that hurting FSU's recruiting for 20 or 21 at all. Pretty good athlete, by the way, and throws the ball pretty well. So we'll see how he develops as a sophomore this year, as a junior this year, but promising kid to be sure.
They going to sign a class of Taggart Jr. and Trey Fisher, bud? Is that what you're predicting?
Look,
Trey Fisher will be the first 5 foot. I'm not knocking on him. I'm a 5'9" individual myself, but Trey's going to be the first one to get a scholarship from Florida State.
He's like 5'6", but
okay. Well, you know, he'll get.
I got to tell you, actually, for a high school quarterback, Trey Fisher's pretty good.
He can sling
he
it.
He really can
throw the ball.
I'm not being sarcastic here at all. Like, he really does throw the ball well, and he's just tiny. That's kind of that's like the issue. Like, teams do make compromises on height more now than they used to. I think part of that is because of the different splits that you see with the offensive line. You have bigger throwing lanes, bigger windows, but that's just too short. I think he'll play college ball somewhere though if he wants to. Just maybe not, you know, high level FBS ball. By the way, did you see Tom Brady tonight looking like a Bond villain in a mariachi suit?
I'd love to know the mental transition that just occurred in your head there, but yes, I did see that. And I mean, he was not the only one to maybe make a bizarre choice as far as some of the closing options, but yeah.
By the way, I really wish I had gotten into the prom industry a long time ago, because the stuff these kids wear to prom is kind of ridiculous, and there's no way that, like, they own it, so they all have to go out and either buy it or rent it. Like,
It's all rented stuff.
And the markups definitely. On the rental, on rental property, or rental anything, is usually really nice. So, also, custom balloon things. I don't know if you've seen this or not, but, like, the balloon displays, very popular this year for prom, like for props for taking pictures next to. Not anything inappropriate. It's just hard to describe. I only bring this up because I had to follow all these kids on Twitter, so I have all my lists set up. And like this time of year, it's just like nonstop prom pics. And it's like, man, this is just somebody is making a killing on prom stuff. So,
yeah, it's an industry, definitely.
We have an ad read to do for Resolution Home Loans, by the way, and we've already told you about their 15-day closing guarantee. Chad sent us a note, and he's like, hey, I don't think we've ever actually talked about refi option. That's kind of cool. So we're going to do that now. Resolution Home Loans has been our sponsor this year for home loans. That's 844-FSU-LOAN or fsuhomeloans.com. Check them out. When you deal with them, you get Shannon. He's Chad's number one guy. He's a Knoll in Tallahassee. He'll deal with you one-on-one. Those who call get the best deal with the best guy. So go ahead and do that. But check this out. They also help current homeowners if they're looking for money to do some home improvements, want to look at doing some debt consolidation to free up some monthly cash flow, get rid of mortgage insurance if you put less than 20% down, or if you just want to see if you can lower your rate and lower your payment. Chad and Shannon are always looking for ways to save you money, and there's no obligation or cost to you just to get some good quality financial advice from some fellow Knowles. Definitely hit them up, FSU Home Loan or 844-FSU-LOAN. And with that, let's get into our buy-or-sell segment. I think we have a couple tonight. That we can do. Ingram, I'll let you start with this one. If college baseball and college football had the postseason format throughout the 90s that exists today, football would have at least two more titles, and baseball would have at least one.
Yeah, I can buy that. Bye. There's many times where, particularly in the meat of the 90s, I'm talking about the decade that Florida State was probably the best team in football. It just didn't work out at a particular bounce. I think 97 team could have won. Just a lot of opportunities. And maybe if you have that system in 96, maybe you don't get paired up with Florida and New Orleans again. So, and baseball, I would think, I don't know exactly what the butterfly effect would be for baseball, but I imagine if you change just about anything that maybe one of these third strike calls goes your way or something like that, that could have possibly given you a trophy on a trip to Omaha.
I totally agree with you there. I mean, there's very little doubt in my opinion. Number two, Florida State reclaiming the field, reclaiming the state on the field and in recruiting over the next three seasons over Florida and Miami. So I guess the field is going to be easy to see. That'd be record. So what, next three seasons, that means you have to be 4-2 against them. Does that sound right? Because 3-3 would not be. And then you have to out-recruit them in 2 of the 3 years, basically. So having the higher rated recruiting class, or basically having a higher rated recruiting average over the next 3 years than those three, right? Or than those two. That sound right?
Yes.
All right. So we've defined our terms. I'll buy. Yeah,
I buy it.
I'm gonna buy. I know statistically that's probably not more likely, but I think that Florida State can get it done. I like Florida State's roster for the most part. The key year will probably be this year. You know, if you can pull off quote unquote upset down there in Miami and hold serve against Florida, then you're already you know halfway there. So that's big. And then in recruiting, I don't know what years they'll beat them in specifically, but I think that I do like Florida State's chance to have the highest rated recruiting average over the next three seasons. Buy or sell, Bud should have went to Florida State for law school. Florida State should have given Bud 100% scholarship instead of what they wanted to offer, and Bama is ranked higher and is better for law school, and they also pay 100%. So hard sell on that one.
I will. I'll pass on that opinion there.
I don't know how much I would have actually studied if I went to Florida State Law School, so it's probably good to get away from the scene a little bit.
Yeah. Lord knows Tuscaloosa is an easy town to put your head down and really do some work.
It is, but, man. Yeah. And then here's two questions to finish. These are not buy or sell, because we already asked some buy or sells kind of interspersed throughout the show. How much of an impact with this new coaching staff in years 2 and 3 of their regime? Is it possible that we might be looking at a third dynasty, or will he be laying the foundation for the next coach to take over? I think kind of in the middle. Like, I don't think that first of all, this idea of a third dynasty.
I love it. Let's jump right into it.
Do you think do you think that they're coming off a dynasty?
Oh, yeah. No, I would not classify anything that we've seen recently as a dynasty.
They had an incredible 3-year run.
Exactly. It does not a dynasty make.
Yeah, so I'm going to reject that premise. I think somewhere in the middle, I think Willie Taggart will do a excellent job. I don't know about a dynasty. I'm certainly not going to project a dynasty. If it happens, that's awesome. But I think this notion that people have that he's just a recruiter and can't coach is also misguided, and I'm not really sure where that notion comes from, although I kind of have some suspicions sometimes about where that might come from. Number two, Ingram, if Willie gets that call from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in 5 to 7 years after a successful run at Florida State, does Walt Bell get the call to take over? This is highly speculative.
I would love for anyone to tell me that they have the information needed to answer that one with any kind of certainty. I'll tell you what probably doesn't happen is that Walt Bell, if he does field that call, it's not a local call that Florida State's making. I mean, you're going to have to go, you know, it's not going to be Florida State assistant coach Walt Bell, who's been here for 6 years. Yeah, maybe he has a nice little run here for 2 or 3 years and has gone out and proved himself at a program that would be a suitable stepping stone to be able to coach at a place like Florida State. But that's a question that would be hard to answer.
So I'm glad you said 2 or 3 years, because I think there's a discussion to be had here about Walt Bell. And I like Coach Bell, and I think he's going to do a good job, and I think he's a bright young mind. I think there are some media who are impressed with kind of how he presents himself and how he talks. And they're like, hey, he's one of those hot young mind type things, up and coming coaches. I think there's some that are kind of artificially speeding up the timeline with which he projects to leave. And I think he's made no secret that he wants to be a head coach. However, largely due to some very bad luck with quarterback injury at Maryland, Bell has not been the actual OC of any elite level offense. I think he has a very good understanding of football, and I think he has the ability to teach it. He also had 3 quarterbacks get hurt last year, which is pretty freakish and random. So it's a lot easier to get hired on potential, I think, as a coordinator than it is as a head coach. As a head coach, you have to be hired with more of an established track record. That's why I'm not worried about Walt Bell leaving in 2 years. For me, it's more 3 or 4 years, because his track record of producing top offenses is really not there yet. There's all the reasons to believe he can do it, and there's a lot of really positive indicators. But he doesn't have this super long track record that would cause a program to hire him away not a good program at least, as a head coach. So I think these people are like, oh, we got, you know, might lose Walt Bell in a year or two. I disagree with that. I think he's going to be here for 3 or 4 years. Now, 5 or 6 or whatever, too long. But, you know, what kind of job is going to hire Walt Bell after 2 years at Florida State?
I think we touched on this a while ago. If Walt Bell's leaving after 2 years, it probably means Florida State's done something pretty special.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's dependent upon the size of the program that he would potentially be leaving for. But he's got some work to do before he starts fielding large offers.
Right, like a Power 5 head coaching job. It'd be very hard for me to see that happening before the 2021 season. I think that's it, man. We've passed a certain number of reviews on iTunes, I saw. Did you see that?
I did not. Where do we sit?
We are, I think we're over 2,100 now.
Absurd. Yeah. Appreciate it as always. Thank you. I'm almost embarrassed by that number.
2,168.
2,168. That's incredible. So the iTunes reviews, like the gentleman who wrote in, Mike from San Diego, mentioning to companies when you buy stuff that's where you heard it from. Or I know another guy recently bought a significant amount of Louisiana and tagged them in Publix and in social media. Anything like that that you guys feel comfortable doing is exceptional. It's a fantastic support of the podcast and something that Bud and I have been fortunate to be able to do as long as we have, and look forward to doing it for as long as it's a product that people have an interest in. So thank you very much for the support, as always, and we'll look forward to speaking in a week or so.
All right, guys. Take care.